Thanks for listening to the Wellspring Church Podcast.
2020. Happy New Year, everybody. Are you ready for 2020? 20 years into the 21st century. How did this happen? Now, for those of you that are my age or close to my age, how many of you remember vividly the 19 whatevers? The 19s. Yeah, most of us, right? How many of you remember 2000? Like New Year's Eve when it turned 2000. Remember that? Remember how we all pretended like we weren't scared about Y2K? Y2K was a big deal. Then we were told it wasn't going to be a big deal. And at 11:59:58, we're all like, this is going to be okay, isn't it? And then it hit midnight. Nothing happened. And then we all were like, I knew it all along. I knew it wasn't going to be a big deal. These people are all crazy. It wasn't a big deal. For those too young to remember, Y2K, there was a Y2K scare. There was a thought leading up to the year 2000 that when the clock hit midnight, every computer in the world would stop working. Didn't happen, but for a while we were afraid it was going to happen. So, man, it's crazy. I've been reflecting, like 20 years into the 21st century, like we're straight up in the 2000s now. Like we're in, you know, 19 is gone, 20 is here. And I've been reflecting on, I was 20 years old when it turned 2000. And I've been reflecting on those last 20 years of the 20th century and thinking about all the things that I thought we'd have 20 years into the 21st century. Like I assumed 20 years into the 21st century that we would be able to sort of talk to whoever we wanted, whenever we wanted, over a screen. And we can do it. We have FaceTime, we can talk over computers, we can talk over our phones. I assumed that we would be able to carry around entertainment devices and televisions in our pockets. We can. We have all those things. I assumed a lot of the technology we have now would be around. There is one thing, though. There's one thing that I feel like I was promised in the 1900s that it's 2020 and we still don't have. And I'm talking about flying cars. Who just said it? Flying cars! Back to the Future told me we would have flying cars by now. Flying cars! It's 2020, people. Why don't we have flying cars? And as I was reflecting on it, we don't have flying cars because it would be a horrible idea to have flying cars. We have a hard enough time staying in straight lines when we're on one plane, when we're just horizontal. Can you imagine if you could go horizontal and vertical as you were trying to travel? Can you imagine trying to park a car in the air? But I mean, don't get me wrong, flying cars would be amazing. You just pop in your car, you fly to work, you fly to the beach, it'd be fantastic, but it would be a disaster. So even though Back to the Future made promises, they wrote some checks that their reality couldn't cash, we don't have fly. It's so funny that you all knew, I was going to say. That's amazing. That's so funny. Now, I want you to imagine with me for just a moment that me or someone you know and someone you love, someone you care about, was genuinely upset because we didn't have flying cars. Like, genuinely upset. Like, they had decided, look, I've given it 20 years. I've given the auto industry 20 years. It is 2020. We still don't have flying cars, so I'm done. I'm not going to drive anymore. I'm not getting in a car anymore. I'm not doing anything until this car can fly. Now, just imagine me for a moment. Someone you loved, someone you cared about felt this way. How would you interact with that after you stopped laughing at the person? How would you interact with that person? Well, you probably try to remind them that again, it's probably not best to base our expectations on movies about time travel. You talk about the things we just talked about, the impracticality of flying cars. And what you try to do is you try to change their thinking about flying cars. What you wouldn't do is engage the premise of flying cars. You wouldn't engage the premise. You wouldn't say, hey, look, it's just 5 years down the road. It's just 8 years down the road. You just have to be patient. you try to change the premise. Because what you would understand inherently about that problem, you would understand that it's the premise itself that's the problem. Being upset that we don't have flying cars would make absolutely no logical sense. And so you would simply try as hard as you can to help that person gain a better, clearer perspective about cars. You would try to change the premise that they were struggling with because you would inherently understand that it is the premise itself that is the problem. Now, that's a really silly point, a really silly illustration. But I believe it has significant value for us today, for us this year, and for us as we move forward in our lives. Because here's what I know about you and what I know about me, what I know about all of us as we start a brand new year. For some of us in the room, January 1st, we hit the ground running. We had resolutions. We were ready to go. We're making changes. Things are getting better, and we're all excited about it. For others, it's January 5th, and your resolutions are done. You're like, that was a good try. I'll try again next year, no big deal. And for some in the room, maybe this year was a year where you just decided not to try at all. See, I think all of us have certain pieces of our life, whether we have a ton of resolutions or none, we all have certain pieces in our life, certain struggles, certain issues, where coming into 2020, we're probably looking in the mirror and saying, you know what? It's really not worth trying anymore. It's really not worth trying to improve this area. It's not worth trying to change this area. It's not worth trying to do anything about it because I've been there, done that, tried before. It didn't work before. So I'm probably done. I'm done with that. For some of us, it's our health. You've tried before. You've tried to eat well. You've tried to get back in the gym. It didn't work. So maybe you've already given up in 2020. For others, it could be our finances. You know, I've tried, man. I've tried to do the budgeting thing. I've tried to do all this stuff. It just doesn't work for me. You don't understand. There's situations going on. It's just not for me. I just give up. For others, it's relationships. Man, I've tried to work on this relationship with my friend. I've tried to work on this relationship with my parents. I've tried to work on this relationship with my spouse. Like, I've tried. Yeah, man, we went to marriage counseling twice, but, man, that was too much. I don't know. It's just not working. I'm gonna give up. You know, I've got some personal habits. I've got some bad habits. I've got some bad tendencies. And I've tried before. You know, I've gone through these different areas. I've gone through these different things. It just never works. And so, you know, I'm going to improve in these other areas. But this one thing, it just is what it is. It's just there. And I just got to deal with it. And I just got to live with it. I think most, if not all of us, probably have something like that in our life. We probably have some areas where, for whatever reason, we've just sort of given up. We've just sort of said it. I just got to live with that. That's never going to get better. And most of us actually know why it's not going to get better. Some of us blame ourselves. You know, it's my fault. If I were just stronger, if I just had more willpower, if I were just better, if I could just figure this out, if I was just smarter, but I'm not. I am who I am. And so it is what it is. For others of us, we blame other people. Right now in your brain, you're talking back to me saying, Trey, you don't understand. I didn't give up on that area of my life because of me. I gave up because of them. You don't know my boss. You don't know my neighbors. You don't know my spouse. You don't know my kids. You don't know my parents. You don't know what they're costing me. You don't know what's going on. I can't work on that as well. Until they get better, until they fix it, I will never be whole. For some of us, we give up on certain areas of our life, not because of people, but because of circumstances. And right now, you're telling a story, and what you're saying is, Trey, you don't understand what's happened to me. You don't understand the tragedies I've been through. You don't understand the circumstances of my life. You don't understand what happened to me in 2019. You don't understand what happened to me 10 years ago, and I'm still not over it. I'm never going to get over it. You don't understand. This thing happened, and it's going to make it impossible for me to ever improve in that certain area. Please stop talking about it. Please move on to something else. Don't make me think about that anymore. And for some of us, let's just be honest, we just came into 2020 on empty. 2019 took everything we have. And the thought of putting more effort into more work, into more things in 2020. You just need a nap. A year-long nap. Look, if that's any of you today, if any of those things resonate, if any of those things are ringing true in your soul, you could admit, yeah, I've given up on this area. I've given up on that. I'm not trying to improve that anymore. I don't believe that can get better. I've sort of stopped because of me or because of other people or because of these situations or just because I'm exhausted. And if that's you, I am so glad that you're here today. And I want you to know, I know exactly how you feel. And I don't believe there's a better place in Myrtle Beach you could be today if that is how you feel. And if you feel that day, I want to say something with every bit of love and compassion I have in me. If that's how you feel about any area of your life this morning, it's like you've given up driving because your car won't fly. See, the situations, the circumstances of your life, the people in your life, the personal struggles you have in your life, the things you've been taught forever are the problem. They're not the problem. They're issues. The problem is the premise. The problem is that you've been fed a premise that, hey, if these things are in your life, it's your fault, or it's someone else's fault, or it's circumstances' fault, and it's never going to get better. See, that premise is the problem. And what we want to do as your church this year is we want to help you adopt a better, fresher perspective on your life. A perspective handed down from the God of the universe. A perspective handed down by someone who loves us and wants the absolute best for our life. And it is a perspective built on three words we say a lot here at Wellspring Church. The three words you saw as you pulled into our parking lot. And it's this three words: better is possible. If you hear nothing else today, hear that we are a church that wants to help you adopt a better is possible perspective on your life, because that is the God of the universe's perspective on your life. Now, let me go ahead and tell you, this will not be an overnight conversion. It takes a lot of time and a lot of work for us to change our perspectives on life, which is why today not only are we launching a series, we are launching a series of series. We are going to spend the next 5 months as a church. 5 months as a church trying to understand how better is possible in each and every area of our life, inviting the God of the universe in to give us a fresher, better, clearer, more accurate perspective on life. So if you came in today exhausted, better is possible. If you came in today beating yourself up because of bad habits and because of things you don't feel like you can get out of, better is possible. If you came in today thinking that a relationship was broken and that you would never be whole because of other people's behaviors in your life, better is possible. And it's not possible because I say so. It's possible because the God of the universe teaches us that. And if you will allow us to partner with you over the next 5 months, if you will allow us to partner with you in each of these areas, I am convinced that 2020 can be the beginning of the best decade of your life. And we're going to start with us. We're going to start with how God views us. That's why today we're launching a series called 2020 Vision. Perfect vision. And guess what? I don't have perfect vision. And you don't have perfect vision. And none of us do, but God does. which is why we're going to spend the next few weeks clearly learning what God sees when he sees us, what God thinks when he sees us. We're going to learn to adopt God's perspective on us. And once we understand how God feels about us, we're going to shift. All right, God, we know how you feel about me. What about all these other people in my life? What are you doing about them, God? Where are you? And so we're going to shift. And we're going to ask God to give us his perspective on the other people in our life, and the friends and the family and the neighbors and the coworkers, the people that build us up and the people that we feel like tear us down, the people that we feel like push us forward and the people that we feel like maybe cost us something. We're going to ask God to help us see them the way he sees them. And then we're going to shift again. And we're going to say, all right, God, what about this? What about this thing that happened to me? Where were you then? What about this tragedy in my life? What was going on? And God has an answer. God can fully explain and walk us through those deepest, darkest moments of our life, the tragedies in our life, and he can help us to begin to adopt his perspective even on those dark moments. And in that moment, when we adopt his perspective, we can begin to see that even in that, better really is possible. And then we're going to round out the spring in May, when we're all going to be even more tired than we are now. Not sure how that's possible. But did you know God even has a perspective on your energy level? God has a perspective on your rest. God has perspective on when you just feel so exhausted, you don't know where to turn. Our Heavenly Father has a perspective. He has a path. He has a view. And he says, even then, better is possible. If you can just begin to allow me to shape the way you see the world. 5 months, guys. 5 months. This won't happen overnight, but it will happen. If you're a guest today, it's your very first time with us, and you're checking out the things of God, I want you to know you're invited to join us on this journey. And there's no more valuable journey you could take in 2020 than to begin to allow God to change the premise of your life, to begin to allow God to change the premise of how you decide if things are good or bad, the premise of success or failure. Because for the vast majority of us, I tell you, it is the premise that is the problem. To help you understand why I think that, I want to turn to a man we turn to a lot here at Wellspring Church, a man named Paul. If you attend Wellspring, you have heard me explain who Paul is roughly 4,000 times. But if you are a guest, let me explain who Paul is. Paul was an early church father. He was a pastor. Paul was an early convert to Christianity, and he was Christianity's first missionary. He would travel to new towns, and he would start churches, and he would then raise up leaders in those churches. He would move on to other areas and start new churches, and he was given a specific calling by God to instruct these churches on how to follow Jesus. They didn't have a Bible yet. Paul literally wrote it. Paul wrote about half of what we call the New Testament. And what Paul would do is Paul would write letters to churches, giving them instructions on what it meant to be Christians. And he would write letters to churches that he started. And he would even write letters to churches that he didn't know. What we're going to look at today is a letter he wrote to a church he had never met. He wrote this letter to Jewish people who had moved to Rome, who were converting to Christianity and had questions. And so Paul writes them a letter. It's called the Book of Romans. And in this letter, what Paul basically does is he writes a letter to people who need their perspective changed. He writes a letter to people whose problem is the premise of their life. They had a premise that if they did certain things, God would do certain things. And that if bad things happened to them, it was because they had been bad. And they had a very behavioral premise with the God of the universe. And Paul writes in this letter and says, no, it's so much better than that. You have no idea how God sees you. And so he spends 11 chapters, the first 11 chapters of the book of Romans, explaining how God sees them by showing them what God's done for them. You know, there's no better way to know how someone feels about you than to look at what they've done for you. Actions speak way louder than words. And so what Paul does, he spends 11 chapters saying, here's what the God of the universe has done for you. This is the new perspective you should adopt. And then in verse 12, chapter 12, he says, in light of this perspective, here's the new premise you should adopt for your life. In light of this perspective, here's the new operating mode of your life. And so this is where we're going to start 2020. We're going to start with one simple decision. It's a decision many of us in this room have made at one point. It's a decision that I'm hoping everyone in the room can make today, but it's a bigger, more powerful decision than maybe we even think. And it's this one decision that shifts our perspective and prepares us for everything God wants to do in 2020. So if you have your Bibles, you can turn to Romans chapter 12, starting in verse 1. Again, remember, 11 chapters of here's what God has done for you. And at the beginning of Romans chapter 12, verse 1, Paul gives us an invitation. Paul gives us an instruction. Here's what he says. He says, and so, dear brothers and sisters, I plead with you to give your bodies to God. Give your bodies to him. What he means by that is to completely and totally surrender every aspect of your existence to the God of the universe. Specifically to his son, Jesus, the man that he sent to earth. What Paul means there and what this invitation is you should surrender complete and total control of every area of your life to my son, Jesus. You should let him be in charge of everything. You should give your bodies, give your soul, give your mind, give it all to God. Give him complete and total control. When Jesus says, look left, look left. When Jesus says, jump, you say, how high? When Jesus says, do that, you say, okay. When Jesus says, don't do that, you say, yes, sir. Paul is saying, you should surrender and abandon all your needs, all your wants, all your desires, all your hopes, all your dreams, all of it to my son. That's what God would say. Give it all to Jesus. And any reasonable, rational person would say, well, why, Paul, would I do that? Any reasonable, rational person except the readers of the book of Romans. Because as I said, Paul spent chapters 1 through 11 explaining. That's why he says, and so. Other translations say, therefore, because of, in light of chapters 1 through 11, you should do 12. In fact, that's what Paul says right here. If you keep going, Paul says, because of all he has done for you. See, he's not saying this is just some willy-nilly thing. He's not saying you should just take my word for it. He's saying you should surrender everything to God because of everything that he's done for you. See, what Paul's saying is you need to shift your perspective on God. You need to shift your perspective on who he is. You need to shift your perspective on what he's done. Because once you fully understand what he's done and who he is, once you shift your perspective, the premise of your life will change. The premise that I've built my life on and you've built your life on about success and moving forward and all these different things will radically change, and the premise will become, what does Jesus want? Jesus, what do you want in this situation? What's the best thing? Paul is saying when the perspective shifts, the premise becomes clear. Now again, I'm not going to read chapters 1 through 11, but I'm going to summarize them for you very quickly for those that may not know. What has God done for us? Well, he created us. He created the heavens and the earth, and he created people to have a relationship with him. He created us to love us. Maybe you know the story. The first man and the first woman, Adam and Eve, he created them. He puts them in the garden. He gives them one rule: don't eat from this tree. What do? They eat from the one tree. They invite something called sin into the world, and we've all been paying for it ever since. If you grew up in church, you know what sin is. If you are new to church, a sin is anything we do that God does not want us to do. And even if you don't believe in God yet, we're so thrilled that you're here. You have experienced the ramifications of sin. Sin is painful. Sin is dangerous. That guilt, shame, pain, and regret you feel about past decisions in your life, past moments that you were playing in your head and you wish you could go back and relive. You don't understand why you did it. That's a result of sin. The pain you feel in your life, the upset you feel in your life, that's a result of sin. And the reason God doesn't want us to sin is because he doesn't want us to feel those things. Sin's painful. Sin's also dangerous and deadly because our Heavenly Father who created us to love us, the reason he did not want us to sin was one, because it was dangerous for us, and two, because it would separate us from him. And that's what happened when Adam and Eve sinned and sinned into the world. God was separated. And in fact, the only thing our God can do to sin is destroy it. So I was born and you were born. All of us were born pre-wired to distrust God, pre-wired to sin, doomed to separation from God and destruction. Happy New Year. But see, our God loved us so much that even though he created us to love us, he gave us one rule, we broke the rule. He created the world, we broke the world. He wasn't content to let us live that way. He wanted to rescue us. He wanted to know us. He wanted to love us. He wanted us to know that better is possible. So we decided to pick one man, a man named Abraham. And he said, hey, Abraham, I'm going to do something special through you and your descendants. I'm going to elevate you above the other nations. And as long as you follow me, as long as you stick with me, as long as you stay with me, you're going to be a picture for the whole world. You're going to be a picture of the better that comes from having a relationship with the one true God. And for thousands of years, God established that truth through the nation of Israel. He established the truth that this is what happens when you give your bodies to God. This is what happens when you surrender to me. About 2,000 years ago, God began the final act of his rescue mission. When out of the nation of Israel, he sent one man, his son, Jesus, to complete the act. If you don't know the story, Jesus lived a perfect, sinless life. He never once steps outside of God's plan for his life. At the age of 33 years old, he's handed over to the Roman government because some of the religious leaders didn't like what he was teaching. He is sentenced to death. He's executed. And when he died, what our Heavenly Father did is punished Jesus for my mistakes and for your mistakes and for all of our mistakes, thereby removing the deadly aspect of sin. Because he punished Jesus in our place. And maybe you know the story. Jesus dies on a Friday. He doesn't stay dead on Sunday morning. He comes back to life. We believe he physically, literally walks out of the grave, thus removing the pain of sin, the power of sin. He proved he had power over it. So for those of us who believe in him, we can be set free from that pain in our own lives. So again, when Paul says, I plead with you to give your bodies to God because of all he has done, what he's saying is because God loved you so much, he created the world and created you to know you. He loved you so much that even though you broke the world, he sacrificed his own son to come and rescue you. He loved you so much that while living on earth as a man, Jesus himself chose to give up his own life for yours. That's how much he loves you. So he said, give your bodies to God because he's an all-loving God. No one's ever loved you that much. But wait, there's more. Not only is he all-loving, he died and came back to life, which means he has power over all things. So Paul is saying, give your bodies to God because he's all-loving, because he's all-powerful. And just to throw one more in there, he's all-knowing. He actually knows the future. So the God of the universe loves you so much. He sacrificed his own son for you. He's powerful enough to bring him back to life, and he knows what's going to happen tomorrow. And all he wants is to give you the best life possible. That's what Paul explains in chapters 1 through 11. And so when in verse 12, when he says, therefore, give your bodies to God, the reasonable, rational response is, well, of course. Why would I do anything else? And the reason we don't do anything else is because we base our life on the wrong premise. The premise of, well, I've got to do this to succeed. I've got to have that to succeed. This is how I measure better. This is what that means. And Paul is saying, no. Guys, you don't get it. That is all wrong. Not only is it wrong, it's a trick. You are being tricked by an enemy who is feeding you a false premise because he wants you to be miserable. But our God did all this stuff to prove he really was who he says he is. So in light of all that, gain that perspective and change the premise of your soul. Give your bodies to God because of all of the things he's done. And I know for some of us in the room, we're like, I've done that. I did that back in high school, back in college. I went to a church where you actually had to walk the aisle, shook the pastor's hand. Everybody voted on me. It was great. Nobody voted no. I got baptized 15 years ago. I'm good, Trey. I've done that. I'm good. Watch what Paul says here. The way we do this is to let our bodies be a living and holy sacrifice, the kind he will find acceptable. This is truly the way to worship him, a living sacrifice, a daily sacrifice, a moment-by-moment sacrifice, choosing to embrace God and through his son Jesus as the leader of your life is not a one-and-done decision. It is an everyday decision. It is a moment-by-moment decision. It is, I've just been cut off in traffic. Who am I giving my body to? It is, my boss just yelled at me. Who's in charge? It is, you won't believe what my spouse just did today. Who's in charge? It is a living, holy, breathing, moment-by-moment decision. And don't miss this word. Guess what he finds? Acceptable. You know what that means? That means there are things he doesn't find acceptable. You need to hear me say that. This is a free gift. But it's free because it doesn't cost us anything other than everything. I don't have to do anything except everything. I can't perform my way to God, but the premise of my life must shift. The premise of my life must change. Moment by moment, Jesus is in charge. I am not. That's what he finds acceptable. And Paul says that's truly the way to worship him. That worship word, that word just simply means our response. What other reasonable, rational response is there to an all-loving, all-knowing, all-powerful being who wants to guide your life? The only reasonable, rational response is to wake up every morning, every day, every moment. All right, you're in charge, God. I don't know what's going on here, but you're in charge. I don't know what's happening here, but you're in charge. I don't know what's happening here, but you are in charge. See, when you gain the perspective of who God is and what God's done, the only reasonable, rational response is to shift the premise of your life. That we are no longer in charge. And that he is because of all that he's done for us. And when we make that decision, here's what Paul says, here's what happens. Don't copy the behavior and customs of this world. Don't try to retake control. Don't fall for a false premise. Don't follow the other premises. Don't do that. But instead, let God transform you into a new person by changing the way you think. Let God change you into a new person by changing the way you think about yourself and the way you think about other people and the way you think about the good moments in your life and the way you think about the bad, painful moments in your life. The way you think about being full and the way you think about those moments where you just feel empty. As I said, that change doesn't happen overnight, but over the next few months, we believe that the God of the universe can begin to radically change the way we think about every area of our life as we gain his perspective and as we adopt his premise that he and he alone is in charge. And as we do, we'll begin to see not only is better possible, better is promised. Watch this. Then you will learn to know God's will for you, which is good and pleasing and perfect. Then you will know. Once you adopt God's perspective, once you embrace his premise, once you relinquish control, once you determine, because of all he's done, I am going to surrender my life to him daily, moment by moment. And when the tension comes, when the struggle comes, when someone else tries to feed you a false premise, it is in that moment that you say, nope. Nope. Jesus is in control. And I trust him. And it's when we've made that decision that we begin to have our eyes open to discover God really is who he says he is, and he really will do what he says he's going to do. What if in 2020, God's main desire for your life isn't better results, but a better perspective? What if your problem isn't other people? What if your problem isn't your bad habits? What if your problem isn't the circumstances of the past? What if your problem is the premise? And what if today God is inviting you to adopt a new, clearer, better perspective and to build your life on a new, better, perfect premise? And what is that premise? It's something we say a lot here at Wellspring Church. It's that Jesus is the sole source of our soul's satisfaction. He's it. He is the sole source of that peace and contentment and joy that you have been desperately searching for. If you tried in 19 and in 18 to find it in other things, if you tried to find it in success, if you tried to find it in finances, if you tried to find it in exercise, if you tried to find it in all those places and it didn't work, I know you're frustrated. I know you're upset. I know you want to give up. But you're stopping driving because your car won't fly. The premise is the problem. And in 2020, God is inviting us to flip the script. God is inviting us to adopt his perspective. I'm speaking to people who have called themselves Christians for 20 plus years. I know in my life, there are areas, there are places where I've stopped saying Jesus is the sole source of my soul's satisfaction and I chase other things. In 2020, we need to put that aside. Do you know where you are taking back control? It's where you are most dissatisfied because it's the premise that is the problem. You're being fed a false premise. So in 2020, how would your actions change? How would your life change if you adopted this idea that Jesus is the sole source of my soul satisfaction? Jesus is the sole source, not my spouse's performance. Jesus is the sole source, not my success at work. Jesus is my sole source, not my children's performance. Jesus is the sole source of my soul's satisfaction. For some of us, we need to be reminded of that truth today. For others, today might be a chance to embrace it for the very first time. So if you've never switched the premise of your life off of yourself and onto Jesus, if you've never given him complete and total control, if you've never made him the leader of your life and you would like to do that, I want to give you an opportunity right now. I'm going to invite everyone to bow their heads and to close their eyes. And if in this moment you would like to make Jesus the leader of your life, if you would like to surrender your will to him because of all he's done, I'm going to give you an opportunity to do that. Just pray these words to him. I'm going to guide you. Just pray these words in your heart to him as I say them out loud. Jesus, I want you in my life. Jesus, I want what you offer. Jesus, I admit that I am a sinner. And I admit that I've been living my life on the premise that I was in charge. But in this moment, I believe that you are who you say you are, that you came to rescue me. I believe that you died for me. I believe that you came back to life. And I believe that better is possible with you in charge. So today I commit my life to you. I commit to allowing you to come in and be in charge of every area. I commit to allowing you to change me so that I can see the world how you see the world. Thank you for saving me, Jesus. I give you control of my life.